I've never done this before, speaking sitting down, so it feels really weird. But it's either that or not speak, so. Hi, I'm Melanie Young. Welcome to Homeschooled from the Beginning, Teaching Your Little Ones. I'd like to introduce myself first. We have six great sons who range in age from 17 down to 5. And we have one little princess, and I use the word very meaningfully, who is 2. She's spoiled rotten from all those big brothers. All of our children have been homeschooled from the beginning. And it's kind of a funny story for the as long as we have been homeschooling, but it's probably not a funny story to you. We decided to homeschool before we had children. Did any of you decide to homeschool before you had children? See, I see a lot of you. But when we started, that was extremely unusual. In fact, it was weird. And so when we announced to our families, because, you know, we were really naive at the time, you know, we just decided we were going to do this, thought we'd prepare our families now before we had kids. So we told them, okay, we're going to homeschool our kids. And they said, no, surely not. Hal's family was full of public school educators. My grandmother, to her dying day, 15 years later, never saw me that she didn't say, aren't you going to let those children go to school? And so at the time, it was a time of persecution. The time we decided to homeschool, I remember reading an article about 7 fathers who had been arrested at a Nebraska church. The police had broken down the door of the church and arrested the fathers for allowing their children to be homeschooled. And so it was a kind of scary time, and in many states at that time, you suffered a lot less persecution if you had a degree in education. So we decided I would go to graduate school in education, and that really convinced us to homeschool. Because when we learned what they were teaching the teachers, we said, over our dead bodies will these people ever teach our children? So we decided that, yes, we were homeschoolers, and that's before we had any children to homeschool. But we took John to our first conference in arms, in my sling. And it's been a long and very worthwhile journey since then. We've homeschooled for 13 years now, officially. It's been 21 years since we made the decision. And I just want to tell you that it may be because of our history, but you are my favorite homeschoolers. Do you know why? Because you have incredible advantages over other homeschoolers. See, you have time to think and learn. When you decide to homeschool while your children are little, you have time to subscribe to magazines, to read books, to develop an educational philosophy, to decide what kind of homeschooler you are. When you take your child out 2 weeks before they enter ninth grade, you just better start swimming fast. There's no time for philosophy. And so you have a great advantage there. You also have a tremendous advantage in that you have time to grow into it. You know, you start from the very beginning. Son, let's count. 1, 2, 3. You're not starting in trigonometry. It's really scary to some people when they realize that the Lord is just giving them no peace and they have to homeschool and their child is in trig. But see, by the time you get to trig, you will have done first grade and second grade math and third grade math and fourth grade math and fifth grade math and all the way up, usually multiple times because you have several children. And so by the time you get to trig, it's not going to be this arcane stuff that you don't remember. It's going to be right there where you are. And that's a great advantage. You also have an advantage in that your children are not bringing home bad social habits and learning habits. Now, your children are still sinners, and you will still have some big battles on your hands. But they'll be your family's battles, and you won't have to fight everybody else's family's battles that your child has picked up and brought home to you. You also have time to market. I hear so many people tell me, I'm a Lilachi League leader, and so a lot of the women in my Lilachi League group say, oh, I would love to homeschool, but my child can't wait to go to kindergarten. I don't know what to do. I can't just say no to him. Well, I say, first of all, you're the mom. You can say no. That's why children have parents. But also, what she has is not a real problem. She doesn't have a problem in that her child has made a decision based on principle that he needs to go to public school. What she has is a marketing problem. Now see, when you start out from the beginning, when you start out when you've got a babe in arms, then when they first say, "Mommy, what's that big yellow truck?" You can say, "Honey, that's a school bus. See, the government sends those around, and they pick up children whose parents either can't or won't homeschool them, and they take them to a big building where the government teaches them." And they go, "Oh." Because they're picturing something like the child catcher, you know, in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you know. And when they drive by and they say, "Oh, there's a playground next to that building. I want to go there." Now, see, when you're a smart homeschooler, you don't say, "Oh, I'm sorry, honey, you're never going to get to go there." You say, "Oh, I know that looks like fun, but see, they only have a few minutes a day to play on that playground. Because, see, that's a school. And that's where people go whose parents either can't or won't homeschool them. And the government teaches them. And they only give them a few minutes a day to play on the playground. And they even have to go to school on their birthday." Now, when you market things properly, then your children will not be worrying you to death about going to school. And, you know, none of that is untrue, really. And you don't want to be ugly. You don't want them to despise public school students. Because there's a lot of people who, for very good reasons, are not homeschooling. But you do want them to see that they have a very good thing in being a homeschool child. You know, that they have a mom who can decide to let them play outside for longer than 20 minutes. And the bell's not going to ring. And they have a teacher who would die for them. And they have classmates who love them, and they don't have to go to school on their birthday. You know, that's been a rule in our house from the beginning, that we don't do school on birthdays. Now, that is becoming more of a problem now that we have 7 children. You know, that's added 7 holidays to our school year that we didn't start out with. But the children look forward to it so much. They plan their day. They plan things to do together on that day. And to them, it's just a real shock that other kids have to go to school on their birthday. Another advantage you have is that you have time to get connected to a peer group. Because one of the most difficult things when you remove a child from school is that they have lost their peer group. And it's hard for them to reconnect into the homeschool peer group because of the fear that they have lots of times of being a new kid in a new social situation. Whereas when you start from the beginning, you have the option to, and I think you really ought to, get plugged into a support group, get to know other homeschoolers, so that your children see this as a normal thing. It's an expected thing. And that's a very important part of this. Now, beyond your advantages, the preschool years, and I don't mean the years you go to preschool, I mean the years before formal education, are very critically important. You've heard of that book, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And it was kind of cute. You know, he just said, you know, I learned to line up, I learned to share. But really, everything you need to learn, you learn at your mother's knees. The critical skills of life that make a difference in what kind of happy life you have, you learn right there when you're 2 or 3. You learn obedience. You learn respect. You know, all those things that you need to know to have good character or learn in those early years. You know, Martin Luther quoted a very old saying. He said, "Give me a child until he's 7 years old, and then anyone may have him." Because those character things set in those first few years are absolutely critically important. You've heard the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Well, in many ways it's true, because the foundation you lay in these early years are the very most important part of homeschooling. It's the discipleship. And discipleship is at the very base and root of homeschooling. You know, Christ lived with his disciples. He didn't disciple in the synagogue from 10 to 12 every day, or even from 8 to 4 every day. He lived with them, and he walked with them, and he talked with them as they went about the normal duties of life. And that's how he taught them. I recommend you do the same with your children. You start out by explaining everything. Okay? It's kind of a twist to your thinking. You need to develop an atmosphere of learning in your home. And that means you think about teaching. You don't teach during school, but rather you disciple your child. You teach him all the time, as you rise up, as you lay down, as you walk in the way. You know, Scripture gives us the pattern that real teaching happens throughout all of life. And you will disciple your children throughout all of life, as you get up in the morning, as you run errands, as you do the laundry, as you deal with, you know, an angry neighbor, as you deal with the business, as you go to bed. Those times are times you're teaching your children. You know, how many things could you teach them on the way to the post office? You see, you'd be amazed how much background information about life you know just because you're an adult and you've lived a long time and you've heard a lot of people talk and you've watched a lot of news programs on TV and you've read a lot of newspapers. And you can by passing those things on to your children, you give them a very mature outlook and a depth of information that very few young children have. Now, how does this work? Well, I noticed my children love to compete in the geography bee. And I noticed that the top questions, when they get to the state level, and there's 10 kids left in the state, the questions they ask are very easy for people my age. How many people in their 40s, like me, would not know where the Gulf of Tonkin was? You know, anybody my age would immediately say, oh, that's off the coast of Vietnam. You know, they're going to remember that from just the things they heard as a child. Well, that's why homeschoolers do so well in the geography bee, is my theory, because they've been talking to their parents, and they have absorbed the background information that their parents have as adults. Now, how does this work out? Well, let's go back to the post office. What if every time you go to the post office with your child, you just think of, what can I teach them about this institution? I can teach them about government agencies, about mailmen, about junk mail, about stamps, about the Stamp Act, which was a significant part of the forming of this country, about the Pony Express and how it took 10 days coast to coast, and now our ballots from NCHE took 3 weeks to go less than 100 miles. You know, you can teach them about barcoding, airmail, international mail, mail fraud, anthrax, about epistles, about how the books of the Bible of the New Testament were actually letters. You can teach. If you just think about it, you know a tremendous amount of background information that no four-year-old is going to know. And by imparting that to them, you begin to give them a delight in the world, that there's so much to be learned in the ordinary things of life, like going to the post office, that they begin to be fascinated with learning, and they'll start asking you questions, and you won't have to start these conversations. They'll say, Mom, tell me, why do we drive on the right side of the road? You're going to have to find out if you don't know. But you need to start living intentionally, to thinking about what you're saying to your children, thinking about taking advantage of those teachable moments. But discipleship is a lot more than just imparting head knowledge. Okay, discipleship is teaching them how to be who you are. Now, that's a pretty scary thing, isn't it? I find that very sobering, but that's what discipleship is. The disciple becomes like the master. Now, that's a challenge to us to get our hearts right with God and to make sure we're on the right path, because our children are following right along behind us. Now, that's very scary, but it's even scarier to think about the opposite. What if our children, instead of following along behind us, we're following along behind a stranger chosen by a computer system at the school board? You know, you want your children following along behind you because you are the ones that your children have been given to. Now, so they learn love of the brethren through having to share with their brothers. They learn obedience when you teach them that no means no. They learn self-control when you tell them there's no snacks before dinner. They learn respect for their daddy. They learn reverence by sitting still in church. They learn patience when they wait for mommy to finish nursing the baby before she does something for them. All that character training is done right there in those very early years, and that's homeschooling. That's the foundation of homeschooling, and it's what makes the academic learning later possible. Because if your child will not obey you when you tell him to come to you, do you really expect him to obey you when you say, "Son, I want you to get that pre-calculus lesson done today"? No. This is where you lay the foundation. And also, as they see you read your Bible, pray, worship, and serve the Lord, they are watching you, and your children will know what is really important to you. And that's a really exciting thing. Because as they grow up, I have a 17-year-old who's about to go spend 3 months in communist China. And I'm not worried about him spiritually, because I know that his faith is built on a rock. And that he's very strong. He's light years ahead of where I was at 17. Because he's been living and learning and watching for 17 years in a Christian home, 24/7. And it's had a tremendous impact on him. And so as you live intentionally before your children, they will see you as you really are, and you will make disciples of them. Make sure that you make the kind of disciples you want them to be, and that means being the kind of person you want them to turn out like. But hey, what about academics? I want my children first and foremost to follow Christ, but I've got to teach them how to read, and when do I do this? That's what you're really aching to know, right? Well, right off the bat, you need to understand that every child is different. They will be ready to start at different ages. And if you do not accept this now, you will have a lot of heartache over the course of homeschooling. They need accommodation. Sometimes they need different curricula. I had this idea that we would buy curricula with my oldest, and every single child would use it. And in some subjects, it's true. In most, it's not. Because each child learns differently. And something that worked for my first, for example, in Latin. My first son loved Latin primer. Learned so well with it. My second child, useless. I mean, he learned nothing, remembered nothing. He thrived in Mat and Latin. I thought to myself, oh, Mat and Latin is a better program. So I told all my friends about it. And then my third child came along. And Mat and Latin was just too intuitive for him. He's a math man, and he's like, don't make me figure it out. I want to know the rule. And so for him, Latin Christiana. And so you have to be flexible. You have to realize that that's one of the big advantages of homeschooling, is that you can adjust to what a child needs. That means you've got to adjust when you start. I learned this very painfully myself. My first, second, and third children were reading chapter books by the time they were six. I was a great homeschooler. I was so good at teaching reading. And then I had a fourth child. And my fourth child learned to read at 9. Now that's pretty scary, isn't it? Your heart beats a little fast. You think, oh no, what if that happens to me? But if it does, God will give you grace. I want to urge you not to make the mistakes that I made and assume that each of your children will be the same. I want you not to make the mistake of setting goals, like I heard a homeschool mom say recently, it's my goal that my child will learn to read by December of this year. And I just thought, oh, please don't do that to yourself and don't do that to your child. Because you cannot change that child's readiness. My fourth son is just as smart, if not smarter, than his three older brothers. But he has dyslexia, very severe dyslexia. And it took him several years to get to the point of readiness that he was able to coordinate and integrate his mind enough to be able to read. Now, because he was homeschooled, I was able to keep him on grade level in math and history and everything else by reading aloud to him. We read aloud every problem in math, read aloud everything in history. And you can do that for your child. It's very difficult, but nobody's going to do that for them in the system. And so now you're thinking, well, now I don't know when to start. I just want to give you one more caution. Be patient. It's okay if they don't learn immediately. It's okay if you can't start at the time you set to start. And fathers, please listen to me. Because I hear so many mothers saying, my husband's worried because we're not making progress because he's not on grade level and this and that. Because men tend to be that very much, this is the standard. We must meet the standard. But we've got to realize that what they're expected to know in first grade, what they're expected to know in second grade, is an average. You know, it doesn't fit every child. Some children are ready to learn it much earlier, and some won't be ready till much later. And Thomas Edison was sent home from school at the age of 7 or 8 as uneducably mentally retarded. His mother didn't believe it. And so she started reading aloud to him and teaching him. By the time he was a young teenager, he was reading The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. He wasn't uneducable. But he needed someone with more patience than his teacher had. He needed his mother. And so learn to watch your children. Learn to watch for their signs of readiness. And be patient if they hit plateaus. One of my children, it was third grade Saxon. I was in despair. He could not reliably add 2 to a number. Like 3 plus 2, couldn't do it. I thought, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? He's not ready to go into Saxon 5-4. Oh, we're going to do remedial math work all summer. Well, we didn't get much done. There were a lot of crises, you know how it is. Well, by the time we started in the fall, he said, I want to try math 5-4. I said, son, this is not good. You're not ready. He said, I want to try it. And he opened up, and he was ready. And it wasn't due to my teaching him, and it wasn't due to my getting him ready. It's just that he had hit a plateau, and he needed to get to a different developmental level before he could learn more. Now, he went, I'm telling you, in May, he could not add +2 to a number. By December, he was multiplying 3-digit numbers. You can't understand that. Just accept it. But how do I know when they're ready, right? That's what you want to know. How do I know when they're ready? Well, what you do is you try a little, okay? You start teaching them some letters and numbers in the normal course of life is best, okay? Son, how many forks do we need today? Well, how many people are at lunch? He counts them up. Let him count the forks out, okay? Put out the forks. Okay, now put a plate at each place. One-to-one correspondence, he's got it. You know, because as you that in that natural learning, if they're not ready, you're not setting them up for failure. You know, when you get the books out, you are ready for him to learn. You have spent the money on the workbooks. You have a plan for the year. And if he doesn't do it, you're going to get very frustrated. And he's going to get very frustrated, and he's going to feel stupid. And so early learning experiences should be casual. Now, I know you're thinking, because I thought, I don't know what to do. There are some good things to help you out there. One thing that helped me a lot was the 3 R's by Ruth Beechick. Now, before you write a bunch down, when you get home, if you have your computers here, you can look on the NCHE conference blog. And on the blog, in my introduction, there's a link to my personal blog. It's called Mama Hadeen. And I have put these resources out there, and you can just click on them, and it'll take you to them on my blog. Okay, so just look for resources for this workshop on my blog, and there's a link to my blog from the conference blog, and it's mamahadeen.blogspot.com. Okay, so start teaching the letters. Write down an A. Say, this is an A. A usually stands for the sound A. And at this point, see if he remembers it. You know, tell him a few times. If you find every time he looks at it, it's like you never did it before, he's not ready. Okay? If every time it's random and he knows it really well for 2 days and then he can't remember it at all, he's not ready. And so just start adding some of those fun things into your day. Ruth Beechick will help you a lot to get ideas about that. Talk about current events. As you read something in the newspaper, tell him about it. One thing we've done is we've put a world map and a USA map on our kitchen table. And then you can get this in Walmart in the notions section next to the material. There are these big rolls of plastic, and you can roll out enough to fit your table and take it home and put it over those maps and thumbtack it underneath the table so the maps don't get dirty. And you'd be surprised how that will spark conversation over supper. You know, somebody looks down and says, Dad, what's this island? Or, Dad, you said something about the Falkland Islands. Where's the Falkland Islands? And so that'll engage you in developing this lifetime of learning. Now, this sounds very casual, but I'll tell you that I have had three children make it to the state level of the National Geography Bee, and we really haven't done any formal geography. Just by looking at maps and talking about them and talking about current events and talking about history. And so this kind of learning is very, very profitable in the early years. Now, I'm not saying just go about your whole school life unprepared and unplanned and without out curriculum, because I'm an academic fanatic. We're classical homeschoolers. But in these early years, take advantage, teach them the fun and joy of learning. There will be plenty of time for bookwork later. In fact, lots of times, if you do as I did with my first and start them on the bookwork too young, then they burn out so quickly. And you don't want them to burn out. You want them to have an intense desire to learn by the time they start with the books. Now, but, you know, I hear homeschool moms today saying, you know, I'm just going to put my child in preschool for 3 days a week because I think they need the socialization, and I'm afraid there are things that they need to learn that I'm not teaching them. And I really feel this is a serious mistake. Do you know about the history of Maria Montessori? You've heard about Montessori schools. Tend to be very expensive. There's some around here that are $5,000 to $10,000 a year for Montessori preschool. Well, Maria Montessori lived in Italy, and she was in charge of several what they call creches, daycares. And she was very disturbed that the children in the daycares were not as ready for school as the children who had stayed home with their mothers. And so she decided that she would start an innovative program to give the children in the daycares the same kind of advantages that the children at home had. And that's why if you Google Montessori Supply House, and look through their catalogs, you'll see lots of tiny brooms and mops and folding cloths and polishing cloths and play silver to polish. Maria Montessori wanted to give those children in the daycare the advantage of learning how to sweep and learning how to make sandwiches, because she recognized that those ordinary tasks of life are necessary to prepare you for school. And so, you are giving your children a very exclusive preschool education. But how will I know when they're ready to hit the books? There's all those books down there. I want to buy some. I want to take them home. I love them. I want to try this curriculum. It's really expensive. Okay? When they know their letters and numbers confidently and freely. And this is beyond mere counting, when they can manipulate them. Honey, we just bought 20 stamps at the post office, and I put 3 on these letters. How many are left? When they can, and they might have to open up the stamps, they might have to count them, they might have to look at it, but when they can manipulate numbers, when they know most of the sounds of the numbers, you will do so much better when you start your phonics program. Because it won't be as painful to get started. They'll get an easy, quick start. If they already know what C and A and T says, then when you put it together in CAT in those early lessons, wow, the light bulb will go on. They will be thrilled. And so I encourage you to do this early learning before you start the books, because it'll make the books so much easier. Now, I see some moms that I know have a lot of children and have been through this before nodding. It's the truth. If you're patient and do the early learning first, the coloring, the talking about letters and numbers, the folding, and saying, okay, here's a square washcloth. I'm going to fold it in half. What shape is it now? you know, the natural learning of life, then when they do hit the books, they're not going to burn out as easily. They're going to have a head start. They're going to have some confidence when they start the book learning. Now, I know that's not what you want to hear, because that's not what I wanted to hear. I was so excited when I got my first box of books from Timberdoodle. Oh, I was thrilled. And there is some of that, but right now is the time to buy yourself books, not them. Okay? Buy yourself books, read, study, learn, and be patient about buying for them. If you feel like you must buy something, buy it and put it on the shelf and look at it a lot, okay? Okay, but now my child's ready. How many of you think your children are ready now to start the books? Have you got children that are ready? Yeah? Okay, what do you do then? There must be a jillion different curricula down there. It's overwhelming. You go in there and there's books everywhere, and what do I do? And, oh no, is this one better? Is that one better? I want the best. And you get so stressed because you want the best. This is a good time to talk to your husband. Talk it over with him. Explain the differences between the different curricula, because as you talk it over, it'll clarify your own thinking and help you to understand what your philosophy is. I'll tell you a few tips. Pick out something that appeals to you. Okay, because if it's not appealing to you, you're not going to want to use it. And although you may make yourself, you won't. I had a hard time in the early years because we did not have much money. Buying things that were cheap but not easy to use, that is not a good return on your investment, because an unhappy mama makes an unhappy family. And a happy mama is cheap at the price. And so get what you think really appeals to you and suits your teaching style and your child's learning style. And you're going to learn so much more about that in the next few years. I'll tell you some other hints for preparing for this. You do not need 7 different textbooks and 7 different subjects to teach kindergarten. Now, if you have this idea, you're going to go down and buy 7 different textbooks to teach 7 subjects in kindergarten. You need to go wash your face in very cold water and take some deep breaths, maybe do some Lamaze breathing, okay, because you are overwhelmed, okay? It is too stressful. A kindergartner cannot concentrate for 8 hours a day. They can't do it. And even if they could, you wouldn't want them to, because they wouldn't be learning what they need to learn at that stage. And so you need to get your priorities straight. All right, number one priority, love and serve God. Okay, that's devotions. If you don't have, my husband told me 13 years ago, if you don't have time for devotions, you don't have time for school. And I really recommend you start that out, because your days will go so much better when your hearts are centered on Christ first. And also, that's generally when you'll see the ugly attitudes of the day come out and they can be dealt with right away, okay? So what can you do to get started with devotions at this age? Read a small portion in your Bible and explain it to your children. Very easy. One thing that's kind of fun, if you have a whiteboard or just some paper and some markers, is draw some stick figures and illustrate it for them. Now, I am the world's worst artist. There is not one artistic bone in my body. My background is math and science. But you know what? My kids didn't care. They thought my drawings were cool. You know? And so you can illustrate it. You can just explain it to them. Another thing we've done is we do a hymn of the week. Each week I pick a new hymn, and every day we sing all the verses through. And each day I explain one of the verses, because it's usually about 5 verses. And so each day we explain one verse, but we sing the whole thing through every day. My children have a tremendous store of hymns in their memory. And that helps them to be engaged in church and to worship before they can read the hymnal. Another thing we do is we do a memory verse. And children love to memorize. The preschool years are fantastic for memory. They have a memory that is so wonderful because their loading dock is not full of thoughts like ours and things that they have to do. You know, my husband says only so much will fit on your mental loading dock. And if you keep pushing boxes off there, pretty soon they start falling off the end. Okay? Well, the children have an empty loading dock. It's cool. You can put all this stuff out there. Another thing we've done, and there's a link on my blog, is we do a simple children's catechism with them. Now, I'm a Baptist, but there's a great Baptist catechism. There's a great Presbyterian catechism for children. There's a great Catholic catechism for children. It starts out so simply. Who made you? God made me. What else did God make? God made all things. And they love to memorize. They love the question and answer with the parent and child. And it teaches them a framework for understanding of the Bible and understanding about God. I've linked to the one we use on my blog. Then, once you've got that first priority right, then you need to focus on foundations. Math and reading. Because math and reading open the door to the world. Once you understand the basics of math and reading, you can learn anything you want to on your own if you have to. And so your goal should not be to have all these different subjects and academic instruction and everything. Your goal should be to get them, give them a strong foundation in math and reading, because once they have that, they can learn on their own, especially if you train that character right. The third thing that you need to do in getting your priorities right is to protect their love of learning. Now, how do you do this? Well, first of all, God made us to learn. It's natural. God made us to read. Have you ever thought about that? We are commanded to study His Word. He would not have done that without giving us the ability to read. The ability to read was not evolved. It was developed in the very first people that God made. And so it's a natural thing. Don't get panicked about it. I remember being so worried I didn't know if I could teach a child to read. You know? But it's something God made us to do. You will be able to do it. We have to avoid provoking our children to wrath, though. And how can we do that? Well, the number one thing is to avoid busy work. Now, I mean particularly with boys. Because boys tend to develop their small motor skills a lot later than girls. And if you sit a boy down and try to make him write a lot in those early years, you are setting yourself up for frustration, and you're making a little boy who hates school. It's just not necessary. Most of the there's a lot of classroom-oriented textbooks out there that have an incredible amount of written work that you think is expected. Well, what you need to understand is it's not expected. What it is the teacher has got to have something to keep those children who understood it immediately busy while she helps the others. And so it has extra written work and extra worksheets. I'm thinking about one particular very popular curriculum that has a worksheet with one side front and back that you're supposed to do, and then an extra worksheet, you know. And I have a dear friend who is doing all of them. And you've got to understand that all that extra work is busy work. It's to keep the classrooms under control so the teacher can deal with the children who need extra help. But how can you know that they've learned it then if you're not requiring them to write everything down in these early years? Well, you don't need to do it just to document. First of all, that's what I thought. I thought, I've got to have proof that he's learned this. You know, you can write the lesson down and you can write completed orally. It's okay. I promise. Okay? Remember, that sounds really good. Completed orally. All right? But you do need to know that they've learned it. How can you do that? Have them summarize it back to you. Say, can you tell Mama what this story was about? Now, some children will immediately talk for 30 minutes. Other children will say, it was about a dog. You're going to have to draw it out of those children at first. Well, what did the dog do? The dog dug. What did the dog dig? You know, you're going to have to draw it out of them. But if you teach them to summarize what they've learned, that's a great life skill. That's a skill they'll use in college as they're listening to lectures and they learn to write down little bits of what the professor's saying. You can also have them make reports to their grandparents and daddy. Make oral reports. You know, okay, John, I'd like for you to tell daddy what you learned today about the ancient Greeks. And they love to do that. You can have them do projects, hands-on projects. You can have them dictate a story to you or dictate a report to you. That is learning. The reason you didn't do much of it in school is your teacher had 30 students, and you can't do that with 30 students. But it's learning the same way, and it's so much less frustrating for those little guys who have to struggle to make an R and to make an F. When is there any real purpose in them struggling at that point when you're learning history? The point is to learn the history, not to produce some writing about it. They can do that in so many more creative ways that will protect their love of learning until they are readily able to do the writing. And they're gonna get there, I promise. What kind of projects can you do? Well, I highly recommend you not go find a textbook in these subjects like science and history. Have you ever looked at a social studies textbook for first grade or kindergarten? The fireman is your friend. Well, no joke. You know, what child who hasn't been isolated in a daycare, who is not brain dead, doesn't know what a fireman does? First time he heard a siren go and saw that big, beautiful, shiny red truck going down the road, he asked you all about it, didn't he? Okay, so what do they need to be learning in history? They need to be reading biographies. And if they can't read them, you read them to them. There are tons of great kids' biographies out there. Childhood of Famous Americans is one my children have loved. The Dallaire biographies, there's tons of good things. They need to be reading real books, and you need to be reading real books to them. They need to be going on field trips. You know, when Caleb, who's our second son, was 5 years old, we took a field trip, and we had an older child too. We went to the Civil War battlegrounds of Virginia, Maryland, and Tennessee, and we took a camping trip. It was awesome. I didn't know how much Caleb was getting of it. Well, Caleb decided, we had a history day in our support group. He said, I want to do a report on Stonewall Jackson. I said, you do? He said, yes, ma'am. I said, okay. Well, he stood up there, and he talked about Stonewall Jackson for 5 minutes. And it was all right on target. He remembered everything. But see, he had stood on the crest that Stonewall Jackson stood on, and with the Virginia troops, when all the other troops were being routed, and General Early cried out, there stands Jackson like a stone wall, rally behind the Virginians. He'd stood there, and he and his brothers had acted it out. He wasn't going to forget it. You know, he got to play Jeb Early. He knew who General Early was. And so as you go on field trips and do these hands-on activities, your children will never forget them. Our children still talk about a Roman feast we did at least 10 years ago after we had done a unit on ancient Rome. And so you want to use a curriculum in the early years just to organize it, to help you learn what to teach your children, to give you ideas about books. And I've put some links out on my blog that you can check out for some curricula that we've used over the years to help us do that. Okay, there's lots of great curricula based on living books, like the Greenleaf Guides, Tapestry of Grace, Veritas Press, that will, again, if they have worksheets, don't feel like you need to do them, okay? But they'll help you get ideas for activities you can do with your children, for field trips. You know, you can make Roman helmets out of milk jugs. Really? There's cool things you can do that will just give your children a tremendous desire to learn. History and science are great for that. Well, what about science? I recommend you do some unit studies. You don't need anything special to do this. Because did you know there's no particular sequence that children have to learn science in the early years? Did you know there's no first grade science that everybody in the world learns? In fact, did you know first graders in Virginia learn different science than first graders in North Carolina? It's the truth. And your first grader can learn something different too. Okay, there's no set body of knowledge that they have to learn at certain ages of science. What do they need to know about science? They need to learn about the world around them, and they need to learn a desire for learning. Because the scientific method, the idea that I get an idea about something, I go out and test it to see if it's true, it's not a hard thing to teach. And so What can you do? For example, say you want to study birds this semester. So you get a bird feeder and bird seed, and you put it out on your porch, and you draw pictures of the birds you see, and you buy some bird guides downstairs, and you look up what birds they are. And then you might want to go to a Life and Science Museum and see their presentations on birds. Like the Life and Science Museum in Raleigh has a special room your homeschool group can sign up to go to, where they have preserved skins of all kinds of different birds. It's fascinating. The children love it. They can hold it and look at feel the feathers of all kinds of different birds. They can open up owl pellets and look at them. They can hatch eggs. If you contact your local cooperative extension agent, she can get you a hatcher and chicken eggs, and you can hatch baby chickens. Very cool. You might even find yourself getting a pet bird. Now, that hasn't happened in my house because my mother's terrified of birds and we really love Nana. But you might even find yourself getting to that point. The point is to teach them how to learn. Science is about learning how to learn at this age, learning how to make observations, learning how to use resources to find out about the world. Incorporate science into life. Like, I remember when we decided, when all my children were little, I went downstairs and I bought all the different guides, a seashell guide, a bird guide, a marine life guide, you know, a mammal guide. I bought them all. And we put them in a backpack in the car. And there's a place downstairs that sells backpacks full of guides, okay? We put them in a backpack in the car and left them there. And so, like, one time we were at the beach, and I looked down and I saw a strange purple-colored shell. And I picked it up, and it ended up being a conch shell this big with the animal still in it. Wow! Well, we ran and got our shell guide. We looked it up. We read about that animal. We learned about it. And we found out so much. And then we took it apart. We dissected it. And it was something my children still talk about. And this was 5 or 6 years ago. When you're at the mountains, you can collect rocks and look them up. You can pick wildflowers and press them in books and make yourself a herbarium. Doesn't that sound fancy? Do you know what a herbarium is? It is wildflowers that have been and plant parts that have been pressed and dried and mounted on construction paper and labeled with what they are and where you found them and when. And they keep them in a file box. And scientists use them to study plants, to learn about plants, and you can do that yourself. 5-year-old can do it with a little help. That's the kind of science that you need to use to make them love learning. Like, my 14-year-old is studying biology, and he's finding it so easy. Do you know why? Because for 10 years, we've had the Lyrical Life Science CDs, and we listened to them in the car. And so he didn't have to worry about which way xylem and phloem went, because he knew the song. Xylem carries nutrients. You know, he knew the song. He knew what had happened. And so much of this learning can be just a part of your life, so that your children will see life as learning. And that's a great place to be. But what about those little ones that keep interrupting us every time we sit down and try to talk about something? I mean, I'm trying to dissect this thing, and the baby wants to nurse. And the toddler just walloped his sister, you know, and it was with a rake. Okay. Well, I had to realize that dealing with interruptions is a life skill. That my husband did not sit in a completely quiet office and work all day. But the phone rang all day. People stopped by all day long. I bothered them all day long. Okay. Emails came all day long. That dealing with interruptions is just part of life. And contrary to what we've all learned, you do not need to sit in a quiet room with the light coming over your left shoulder to learn. True. You can lay upside down on the couch with your feet waving in the air and still be learning. It's true. I found I had to change my venue. When I pictured homeschooling, I pictured sitting at the kitchen table with my books all organized around me, everything straight, you know, the container of pencils, the sharpener. Well, that's not the way it ended up. The way it ended up was in the recliner with my feet up and the baby in my lap nursing and a child's table next to me with a couple of children working there, because I had some that if you didn't, like, watch them every second they were gone. And then, you know, a toddler upside down on the couch, worrying his brother who was trying to do algebra on the couch. And, you know, one laying on his stomach in the floor, you know, doing science. It's okay. It's okay. You know, I had this idea that I remember the first article I ever saw about homeschooling was in Parade magazine. This had to be 1985. No, maybe earlier, 1982 maybe. Okay. And it had a blackboard in these people's house and a flag stand and some little desk in a row. And I thought that's what it was going to be like. And in fact, if you try to do it that way, you're going to go crazy. I talked to a homeschool mom one time who's, I hope she's not here, who looked so bad. She looked like someone had beat her up. Her hair was wild. She just looked frantic. And I'm an experienced homeschool leader. I sat down next to her. I said, "So, hon, how's it going?" She said, "I'm dying." I thought, that's kind of weird. You know, she's an experienced classroom teacher. This is her first time homeschooling. She's been teaching for 15 years. I said, "Well, tell me about your day." And she said, "Well, first we sit down, and, you know, the children all sit there, and I teach the first math lesson. And then I teach the sixth grade math lesson, and then the third grade math lesson, and then the first grade math lesson. And then everybody does their math work, and when everybody's finished, we move on to the next subject." School was taking her 13 hours a day. You can't homeschool like that, folks. No, will not work. I said, "Well, hon, let me tell you about my day. We get up, we do our chores, we have breakfast, we have devotions together. And then I hand everybody their list for the day. And my older child goes off and works. And when he has questions, he comes back and asks me. My next child, I spend a few minutes going over his math lesson with him while his brothers pick up in the den from last night. And then he goes off and works. Then I get those two little ones that just, you know, can't behave up next to me, and they sit there at the table. And while one is working on some seat work, I'll teach the other one. And then we'll do some things together maybe with the two of them, and then I'll teach this one." And she said, "Cool." It's more like a one-room schoolhouse where the children are constantly coming and going from the teacher. Now, when you have one oldest, he's going to be pretty much sitting beside the teacher. But as he gets older and he develops more character and discipline and self-control, then he'll be moving away from you. And he'll go over here and work, and he'll come back to you. And then you'll need to go help him with a problem or go over a lesson, and then he'll go over here and work. And then eventually, he'll be like my teenager, and he'll take his list, and he'll go, and he'll come back and say, "Mom, I cannot get this pre-calculus problem." And I'll help him with that. And so it's much more casual in some ways, although some women do it with an absolute schedule. You know, this is the time I help this child. This is the time I help that child. It's okay, whatever works for you. You know, schedules used to scare me, but now I think of them as a budget for my time. But you will develop your own way of doing this. First of all, I need to tell you that school does not take 8 hours when you have a kindergartner. School does not take 4 hours when you have a kindergartner. Really, school does not take 2 hours. If you're getting over 2 hours with your kindergartner, maybe he's not ready, or maybe you're trying to do too much. It's okay to start at 10 o'clock when you have a kindergartner. Now, I start at 7, but I'm teaching 6 children now. But my little ones don't start at 7. My little ones start about 9:30 or 10. Okay? So ease up on yourself. It's all right. It's all right to say, "You know, it's a beautiful day. Let's go to the park." There's plenty of room in that kindergarten curriculum to do that. Don't let the curriculum make you its servant. It's your servant. Well, when it comes to dealing with those toddlers, remember that I can't see it, Spencer. I'm 40 years old. Thank you. Remember that it doesn't have to be totally quiet, that your little ones will learn so much just by being there. Put quiet toys in your schoolroom. Let them play around your feet. But what do you do when you have Mr. Must Play Loud and Mr. Distractible in the same room? Well, sometimes you have to get up early and keep your little ones up late at night so they sleep late in the morning. Sometimes you have to use nap time. Sometimes you have to use a video every once in a while when you have to really work on something that's difficult and your Mr. Distractible can't make it. You don't want to do that every day. Lots of times you can send one of the other children to play with the toddlers. But generally, you want to have them just playing around your feet because they're going to learn so much. Can you imagine how easy it is to learn Latin when you've heard those chants when five older brothers did it? I mean, my three-year-old says, you know, amo, amas, amat, amamas, amatas, amat. Now, she doesn't know what it means, but she's heard it so much, you know. It's easy. But why does it seem so hard some days? Because it's a spiritual battle, ladies and gentlemen. Satan does not want you to disciple your children. He does not want you to turn your children into warriors of Christ who can stand on their own two feet and be independent. And so, there will be hard days. There will be hard months. Sometimes there are even hard years where you feel like you have not accomplished what you set out to do. Sometimes you'll feel like a total failure. But I would encourage you that if you do the best you can, the Lord will stand in the gap. Press on through the difficult times and the spiritual battles because it's worth it. You know, often your children learn more during the hard times when little formal schooling actually happened because they learn how to live life through trial and they see the true metal of your character as they see you make it through that time. They learn how to trust God and they learn how to stick together as a family and they learn how to uphold one another. And those are the very reasons that you started homeschooling, so that you could adapt things to them, so that you could do what's best for them, so that you could teach them what's important in life, so that you could build a relationship that would last for eternity in your family. This is a very precious time of life, and you are making the best of it. You are giving them an education, mentally and spiritually, that few people in our age will ever experience. Now, in many ways, this is the hardest time of life if all your children are little. You're overwhelmed. Everybody needs you every second. There's no one to help out. I would encourage you that it gets easier. It's easier for me with seven than it was when I had three. Because now I've got people who can go to the store. I've got people who can finish dinners, people who can rotate laundry, people who can take the baby for a walk while I take a nap. And so you've just got to press on through this time and enjoy it and make the best of it. And what's really the best part is what we're experiencing right now. Right now, as we have children entering adulthood, I am seeing the seeds that I planted when they were two or three, and that we watered so painfully when they were seven or eight, and that we pulled those weeds out when they were nine and 10. I'm seeing them come to harvest and bear fruit. And I'm seeing my children become the young people I dreamed that they would be. And you can do that too. With the grace of God, lots of prayer, and doing things His way, you will see those seeds you're planting now come to flower. And it makes all these days of diaper changes and frustration and an hour and a half to find everybody's shoes to get out of the house. And, you know, 3 hours trying to find the book that you wanted to use to teach phonics. It makes all those days worth it. May the Lord fill your home with the blessed fruit of what you're planting now. Thank you.
Would some young person help me find my glasses that fell off my